Sylvia Sachs and Natalie Apple, March 3rd, 1996. Okay, Irving, you got married in 1942.
March 22nd. It'll be our 54th anniversary in this month. And the day I was in, what was it? I was deferred in 4F or something. I was deferred because I was the chief support of my family.
This was, oh yes, the war, Second
War was on, yeah. But the day I married Rhea on March 22nd, 1942, and on Tuesday, in spite of the fact that I was still supporting my family and had taken on another prison, I was put in 1A and drafted. And joined the Army about November 1st, I think, end of October.
November 1st, 1942.
Right.
Where did this happen?
I was sent to camp up in New York City. By the way, I had gone from City College to Columbia University and get a master's in chemistry while I was working at night.
Camp Upton, was in the city of New York?
It's in Long Island.
And that's where you were inducted, huh?
Right.
Were you able to continue your work at Columbia? Or?
Yeah, well, I have to get down. I did go to Columbia and get a master's degree. I was going to get a PhD, but the war came along, so I only got a master's.
What happened in the Army?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I was sent to Newark. I went to basic training for about 3 months. And then assigned to a 90-millimeter gun in Jersey City, which is right outside New York City. And for a while was stationed at Newark Airport on that gun. But one day they gave us a test, the AS Army Special Training Program, ASTP. The result of that test is that I was classified as a special or something as a graduate chemical engineer. I was a chemist, but I was then classified for some reason as a chemical engineer. And I was sent to Virginia Polytech, VPI, to await reassignment. They said I'd be there for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I never could lose Rhea, because after 19 days, she showed up at CPI. I asked Rhea I was supposed to be there 3 weeks. 9 months later, I took a lot of courses there in microbiology. Anyway, 9 months later, they called my name, 8 people, and I was sent to Chicago. The rest of the people down in that while I was there were sent over to the Patton's Army. I don't know why. Well, I guess it was this test or something. I was sent to Chicago, 8 of us, and I remember entering the room where the fellow in civilian clothes named Captain Baranowski, you can spell it any way you want, said, "I'm Captain Baranowski," and we were surprised that he was in civilian clothes. And he says, "You're assigned to a project, and the eight of you will have to stay in a certain little hotel, a Hotel Miramar, M-I-R-A-M-A-R, until you get your clothes, civilian clothes. You must be in civilian clothes." So I called my mother and asked her to send me civilian clothes. And she said, "Why?" And I said, "I can't tell you, because I really don't know." And she said, are you being discharged? And I said, "No." And then she said, "Are you going to be a spy?" I said, "I don't think so." And then I said, "You just have to send me clothes." Well, 3 of us got our clothes the same day. And we could never leave the hotel. We had to eat there. And we got dressed in our civilian clothes. And we 3 of us needed a haircut. So we went to the barbershop, feeling very funny because we were used to being in the Army by then. and we were getting a, there was two barber shops, two barbers, and two of us sat in a chair and one waited, and the barber suddenly looked at us and said, are you fellows in the Army? And we were surprised because we were dressed in civilian clothes. He said, why do you ask? He said, you all have on Army socks. It was kind of funny. Anyway, I reported to work. It was at the University of Chicago. And the very first day I was there, the man I worked for, who ended up in Pittsburgh, by the way, told me all about what I was there for, and that was they were building an atomic bomb.
Hmm.
And
what was that man's name?
Richard Abrams, and he lives in Pittsburgh. He became he was in the School of Public Health here.
Mm-hmm.
I got here through me. And
he said they're building an atomic bomb?
Yes, and he told me all about it. I never believed it would work. Our job was a very funny one. Out at Hanford, Washington, where they were making enriched plutonium and bombs and stuff, two radioactive elements were volatile and escaped to the air. And there was something called, one was iodine, and the other was something called ruthenium, R-U-T-H-E-N-I-U-M. And our job was to find out what the toxic, what bad effects these two things that hit the air were. And the group I was in, Richard Abrams was a chemist, and I was a chemist, but everyone else in the group was a biologist. And the reason they were, I had to isolate what they call carrier-free iodine from things that had been irradiated at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I asked Maria where Oak Ridge was. I said, you're from Tennessee. Where's Oak Ridge? She said, I never heard of it.
Pardon me, you were to isolate?
They call it carrier-free iodine.
Okay.
I mean, just purely radioactive iodine. And fix it so it could be carried in a stream of air. And the biologists were there. They would take rats and anesthetize them and put them in a long, call it a manifold,
mm-hmm.
where they could breathe it, and I would generate this iodine, and then after they would breathe it in. That's what was happening down
mm-hmm.
at Hanford. And
now, were you in Hanford yourself?
Never.
No.
Only at the university. And I'm skipping some that's not important. I was really assigned to Oak Ridge. I never got to Oak Ridge.
You didn't get to Oak Ridge?
I was told one day to go down to Oak Ridge to pick up a sample. I was not assigned to Chicago. And I got on a train in winter. Train left 63rd Street Station and went to Oak Ridge. And it was snowing like mad about 10 miles out. It just stopped and backed into Chicago. And so I didn't get there. Then another time I was supposed to go down Oak Ridge because I was liaison between Chicago and Oak Ridge. I was supposed to go down and get a sample, and they called up and they said it isn't ready. And then everybody forgot that I was liaison, and I stayed in Chicago. I became part of the Chicago group. My discharge papers read discharge from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I have never been there.
Did you feel that when you were doing this, that you were doing something of value? I mean, did you feel that you had a decent part in it, and it was something of value?
Yeah.
Or were
yeah.
you just spinning your wheels?
I think I made the first radioactive iodine that was tested at the, what's the name of the hospital in Chicago? Billings Hospital. It was given to a man who had thyroid cancer or thyroid
mm-hmm.
problems. And late, I saw his thyroid. They sent it over to them. I don't know what happened to that thing, but I made the first radioactive iodine ever used, actually. No, I felt useful.
I knew they were building
a bomb, and I knew about the war. I have to tell you about my brother. My younger brother showed up one day, and he asked me what I was doing. And I wasn't going to tell him, so he said all kinds of things. And he mentioned an atom bomb, and of course I said no. Just this year, I talked to my younger brother, and he said, I knew that you were on the atom bomb. And I said, well, how did you know? He says, because when I mentioned atom bomb, you lit up like a Christmas tree. I did not know that.
You wouldn't have been a good spy.
No, I would have been a terrible spy. Yeah,
how long were you there? How long were you in the Army?
Almost 4 years. When the bomb was finally dropped, but I have to tell you one thing, we did take a vote. I joined the union of a concern, the atomic scientists, the soldiers who were there. It turned out that about 36, I forget how many soldiers in civilian clothes weren't there. They did not know I was in the Army, people who weren't there. As the thing came toward the end, the Union of Atomic Scientists was a union, and the soldiers, almost to a man, joined the union at a cost of $1. And one day, General Groves, you know, he was in charge of them, showed up and called us together and said, you guys are in the Army, and you're not allowed to join the union. And I'll court-martial every one of you if you don't get out of that union. Like tomorrow morning. So they gave us our dollar back. But they said, as far as we're concerned, you're all members of the union. Anyway, that's the only time I ever saw General Groves. I did work with a lot of, we were assigned to SEEK, we had a seminar, even a young fellow. I sat next to a guy who was a Nobel Prize winner, but I didn't know that, James Franck.
Pardon me,
you want
to spell that?
Franck. And while at Columbia, I had taken classes with Dr. Urey, U-R-E-Y, who got the Nobel Prize later. And his daughter-in-law lived right across the street here. She's now at Pitt, Dr. Baron K.
Small world.
I met Urey once. He would stop here all the time. And I met him, I was walking my dog. I asked him, I said, are you Professor Urey? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I'm one of your 10,000 students. Why are you here all the time? He said, because I have two grandchildren. Anyway, they took a vote just before they dropped the bomb. And the first thing was drop the bomb. And number 10 was, it just destroyed the whole project. It never existed. But number two, because everybody voted for it, and that was drop a bomb on an island, let the Japanese see it, give them 2 weeks to surrender, and that was what everybody voted for that, but of course, they disregarded that. One of the reasons they did is they calculated the terrible losses they had in invading Okinawa and translated that to what happened to Japan. And it was really bad. Anyway, Truman made it. I never believed the bomb would work, by the way. I was shocked when it did. Yeah. Then I stayed on there, still in the Army, to write up reports with Richard Abrams. Everybody kind of laughed because they were civilians. But I stayed there. I wanted to get there because it was a very highly radioactive place. They used to give us a badge which was like 10,000 times.
This is still in Chicago.
Yeah, which is about 10,000 times the allowable amount, and it would be discharged immediately. So I got a lot of radiation. But it's mild. Amazing. I don't have cancer yet. I thought I could get it, but...
You never had any signs or any problems?
No, but the amount of radiation I was exposed to is enormous. They really had no idea, how bad it was. Although we did find out. That was part of my job, to find out why. If you irradiated a fruit fly, it would take immense amounts of radiation, and nothing would happen. But as you went to a rat, it took much less radiation. the larger the animal, the more differentiated your organs are. And so the larger the animal got, the amount of radiation that was harmed became smaller. And we finally realized that. That was from my section. So everybody left, and I was not discharged, so I had to stay on and rewrote up the reports of what we did.
Rhea was with you.
She worked for the personnel director of the project in Chicago. And in fact, her boss liked her so much that the head of personnel, was going to become the provost or the president of Washington University in St. Louis. And he wanted Rhea to come with him. No, not he, but Rhea's boss, her name Johnson. And he worked for the fellow who was going to Washington University. And Johnson wanted Rhea to come with him, and he said, I'd give Irving a full scholarship if you would go to Washington University. But then Johnson's boss, the fellow who was going to be either provost or president, died all of a sudden, and that was over. But a fellow I worked with, what's his name, Rhea? Ben Ferber, worked at the U.S. Bureau of Mines. And he told me that they were looking for chemists. And he gave me the name of the man who was in charge. His name was Storch, S-T-O-R-C-H, which is an important name for you.
At this point, though, you were planning to go to Bradford.
Yeah, I was planning to go back to Bradford. In fact, I had already signed up as physician and surgeon at Columbia to major in biochemistry. I had already, before I left, signed up. But he told me about the Bureau of Mines in Pittsburgh, a place called Brewston. I had never heard of it. And I wrote to Storch, and he said, come for an interview. So I did. And they essentially offered me a job. And I remember calling Rhea, and I was telling her, it looks like we're going to go come live in Pittsburgh. So we came, and I ended up working for what at that time was the Bureau of Mines.
And when was that? What year was that?
That was, I arrived here May 15th, 1946. And I was assigned to a section out there. Well, first I worked on Fork Street, 4800 Forbes, mm-hmm. You know, that's now part of Carnegie Mellon, mm-hmm. for about a year. And then was sent out to South Park, a place called Brewster. And worked for...
I think it's important that you tell them that Storch said you could take courses at...
Oh, yeah. One of the big reasons for coming was Storch said, look, if you come here, you can take courses at Pitt anytime you want, during the day or night, and we'll still pay you full salary. And that was what you call a good fellowship. It was not hard to resist. So with that in mind, I did that. And I also didn't have to pay for courses because the Army had the business of paying soldiers.
GI. Mm-hmm.
I never used up all the GI. So I did start to work there, and I did go to Pitt, and I did get my PhD.
Now, did you have family at that point? Did you have any children?
No.
And where did you come to Pittsburgh? Where did you meet?
Well, it was very hard to get an apartment in Pittsburgh because of the war. There were no apartments available. But we lived in an apartment in Chicago, and it was owned by a Swedish lady, and she came to us, and she said, could you find us two nice Jewish people to take your apartment? So we put an ad in the paper, Pittsburgh paper. We didn't know which paper, but someone said, I think the press. And we, to exchange our apartment in Pittsburgh and Chicago for one in Pittsburgh. And what were the names of? She thought that was ridiculous.
We got a call from Mrs. Pearl, who said her father, Mr. Goodman, just built a building on Darlington Road, the first one since the war, mm-hmm. and he would give us an apartment there and change to their
And his daughter taking her.
They were going to bait.
Yeah. He was the brother of the Mr. Pearl mission.
His name was Merle
Pearl. Merle Pearl.
So you were still living in Chicago. You put an ad in the Pittsburgh paper saying you'd like to exchange.
And I got one answer, and it was on Darlington Road, 5841 Darlington Road.
And so that's how it all came
about.
That's
how we got here, yeah. And that's how we got to Squirrel Hill. I didn't know where Squirrel Hill was or any.
Somebody from here, and then her mother was nice to us when we took
her
to town.
Mm-hmm. And then Rhea got a job as secretary to the head of the chemistry department at Pitt, Alexander Silverman. Maybe you know. Have you ever heard of him? Yeah. So then we had children, and Rhea was pregnant. She gained all of 11 pounds and gave birth to twins unexpectedly. She did not know that she was going to have twins.
She got a PhD in February 1950, and they were born in April.
Yes. 1950,
PhD,
April, the twins.
Yeah. Edward and Donald. And I worked out there and worked for a fellow whom I did not like. My boss was very nice, but the particular guy I worked for, we got along socially, but we did not get along at work. And it was so bad that I was separated from him and worked by myself for a while. And then one day, someone else that was unhappy, they said, would you like to have so-and-so? I met them, work with you. And I said, sure, nobody else is. And but then I did very well out there. And
this is still Brushton.
Brushton. B-R-U-C-E-T-O-N. And then my boss, named Orchard, who went to the University of Cincinnati, and the choice of his successor was myself or the fellow I didn't get along with. And Dr. Storch picked me. And I became...
What was your title?
Head of the chemistry section.
Of the Bureau of Mines?
Yes. So the Bureau of Mines, I have to tell you, was divided into sort of energy, which I was in, and safety in mines. And they had two directors. Storch was not head of safety in mines. So I was in the energy. So I became head of that. And that was, I can tell you when, it was 1953. And published a lot of papers, gave a lot of papers, and somewhere along the line, if you go to my office, Storch evidently died, and they started up the Storch Award, and I was the first winner of the Storch Award.
Which was for what, work in energy or what?
Yeah, work in coal. My field was really catalysis, C-A-T-A-L-Y-S-I-S.
Oh, like catalyst, huh? And what did that mean?
Well, when you add, if you have oxygen and hydrogen in a bottle or tube, nothing will happen. But if I add a catalyst, like a trace of platinum, it increases the rate of the reaction. So they will explode. So a catalyst, your enzymes in your body are a catalyst, and these things happen very quickly. Now, ordinarily, it would take a long time. So I got the Storch Award, the first award I ever got. And then I did a lot of good work out there, and then I got a gold medal given by the Department of the Interior, which I still have, and that was nice.
Right.
Yeah, one day the head of the we hold the energy section, they call it the Pittsburgh Energy Technology Center today, left, And, oh, to make a long story short, they asked me to become the head of it, the director. I told them I really didn't care to, because I said, I'm a chemist, and there are too many chemical engineers out here. And they said, they need a chemist. Besides, he said, you don't have much of an alternative. So I became director of the center.
And when was that?
In 1972. And stayed director until 1979. I was not delighted with the job, by the way, because it was very budgetary thing. And it used to make me unhappy fighting on the budget all the time. But it was a good experience, you know, and I didn't have any trouble with it. I had an open office. People could walk in at any time.
And were you then at on 4th Street, the Bureau of Mines?
No, we were out in Greece.
Still out in Greece.
I got along well with people, and then the Bureau of Mines was taken over in 1975, or for my part of the Bureau of Mines. Remember, this is not in safety, energy. Became the Energy Research Development Administration, or the ERDA, which was not civil service.
It was called the Energy
Research Development Administration, and they became a non-civil service organization. But I still was the head, sat in the same chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about a year or two later, they dropped that and became the Department of Energy. I still sat in the same chair. I still was director of two free administrations, different changeovers. And then in 79, they asked me to go to Washington, and I really didn't want to, but I went finally and became director of Advanced Research and Technology Development of Fossil Energy in Washington.
Advanced Research and Development.
And Technology Development section, the director of that. In Washington.
I'm sorry, what came after development?
Advanced Research and Technology Development.
Of
the Fossil Energy Division of the Department of Energy. And I did not really, well, it was okay. I refused to move, so they allowed me to commute. In other words, I'd go down. I ended up with an office on 4th Street, too.
Mm-hmm.
I had two offices, one in Washington and one here. And I'd go down on Monday or Tuesday and stay till Friday, once for quite a while. And then I always stayed in this hotel. And once I told them I was bringing my wife, so they gave us the bridal suite. But it was an experience, Washington. Really was.
How long were you there?
2 years, and the date is very well fixed, that when I started to leave, because it was the end of the Carter administration. Reagan was going to take over on January 16th or 20th, on 20th, I guess, in whatever he took over. 81, that's right. And Carter was leaving, and I did not like Washington, and they announced that they would give a 9% increase in retirement benefits if you left. And the combination of that, and I decided to retire. I didn't have to at all, but I decided that. The story I tell about Washington is they told me that you needed a thick skin to survive in Washington. When I got there, I noticed my skin was actually getting thicker. It got so thick that in about 6 months I could stand up without any backbone at all. I used to tell that if I did.
And by this time, did you have a third son?
Oh, he was born in 53.
Richard was born in 53, yeah. And after I was in Washington, I got a very nice award. When was that? Do you remember, Rhea? I don't know. But it was by some organization which was called civil service something, but they were not a civil service organization. And they gave 10 awards to people who had done the most for their country. Bork was one of them, and an astronaut was one of them, and this fellow became head of veteran service, had a blue hat, was an amputee without legs, so was one of them. And I was one of them, which was nice. I'm not exactly sure what I did, but I did. And in 1982, I was given the American Chemical Society National Petroleum Award.
Pardon me, what was that year?
1982. Oh, yeah. When I retired, they would give me a party in Washington. And someone from Pitt called up, who was dean of engineering, and said, what are you going to do? I had absolutely, I'm going to clean out the attic kind of thing. And I said, I figured I had an answer that nobody could stop. I would say, I'm going to chase girls. Mm-hmm. He said, no, you're not. You're coming to Pitt. And I said, what for? He said, you just show up. Well, that's, you know, what, 15 years ago.
Okay, he was the dean of what department?
Engineering. Dean of engineering. His name was Max Williams.
And that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, over 15 and a half years ago.
January of
85. January of
85. So you never did not work, huh?
That's right. Yeah.
So were you
never
teaching?
Got a chance to take the chase girls?
Oh, while I was director and while I was in the chemistry division, I taught chemistry at night at Pitt for 8 years. By the way, when they dedicated their new chemistry building, which is 12 stories high, I and another person were the people who made the principal speeches.
And that was
a dedication. Well, really, well, when was the new building? When?
Probably.
About 1985.
So I did make a speech.
So they knew you
were Pitt. Oh, yes. Well, I got there, and then I've been director, which was a big thing, being director of HERDA and energy and all.
Mm-hmm.
I've still known everybody when they say, you mean you were director? That one. So that seems to have been a big thing. I never really thought much of it. I didn't like it. In fact, I've been in the chemical, it's called the Chemical and Petroleum Engineering Department since January
16, 1981. So is that full-time or?
It's full-time.
You teach or?
I taught for a couple of years, but I don't teach anymore. Now I just do research and get grants, which is what you have to do. When I got here, I remember the dean saying to me, oh, it's great to have you. You've been in the government. You know how to write grants and proposals. And I said, no, never wrote one in my life. His face dropped. But I was very successful in writing them. So we got a lot of money to do research. And I worked with a lot of people up at Pitt. And they were very, very, have been very, very nice to me. In fact, in July of 1994, they gave me the title of Distinguished University Research Professor. And I had to give it a public
talk. Pardon me, would you give me that title again?
Distinguished University Research Professor. Which is, it's an unusual title.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many universities.
Okay, I think side two is about to end, and I think what we'll do is continue this interview at another time. Thank you very much.